My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. Welcome into episode 28 of Best Dans in Baseball, the last last podcast of the spring. Cardinals finished their spring up this earlier today. The roster has been set, various things, and Dan and I will get into it. I'm Daniel Shoptaw. That's Dan Buffa. Dan, it's kind of strange. We've done this. We did this last week. It's not quite as long as our gaps have been of late, but there was a lot that happened. There was a lot that happened just today, but especially this week. Let's talk a little bit about, let's just go ahead and talk with the roster. And the biggest news of the day was that Ruben Tejada, who the Cardinals, of course, went out and got to get, to replace Johnny Peralta, then goes down himself with an injury, leaving it open for Greg Garcia was going anyway, but Jeremy Hazelbaker, who has impressed everybody all spring long, apparently, is going north as well. Now, that means that middle infield's a little scary right now, because you're looking at Jed Jerko probably starting, and you've got Mo Colton Wong, and then you've got Greg Garcia, and that's it in the middle of the infield, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess people were a little bit surprised that Elvis Diaz didn't really get considered, but I think they really want him to get those at bats. And you know, if he was up there fighting for time with Jerko and Garcia, you know, I mean, I think this is all predetermined when like Tejada was going to make it, but all of a sudden he doesn't make it today. He's going to start on the DL. But you know, I want to see Diaz as much as anybody, but I understand that you want to keep him maybe playing at least 5 to 6 times a week. And, you know, I see this as a chance for him to get those at-bats down in Memphis. And maybe, you know, if things are looking haywire, or if Jerko's got, you know, 15 errors in April, then you can bring up Diaz and see what he's got. But I think they really want him to get those at-bats and see if he can extend what he was doing in August of last year. You know, he had an okay spring. I think he hit, like, 260 Diaz. It didn't really have a lot of pop, but, you know. I think he had 9 hits, but he didn't have a bad spring training. But I think they just wanted to get those at bats. But Hazelbaker, this is a guy who really came up, you know, got to Memphis last year and over a couple hundred at bats, you know, cranked 10 home runs. He slugged 594. I mean, I'm looking at his page now, and the big thing that I recognize about Hazelbaker is that he's a left-handed outfielder. And that's something the Cardinals, maybe outside of Brandon Moss, they don't really have an abundance of.
Yeah, that's probably true. Although it feels like the Cardinals have plenty of left-handed bats anyway.
Even though they're not necessarily. Well, at first base they do.
Yeah, first base they got plenty. You know, and other places, you know, Wong's lefty, and others. So yeah, I think.
Like, what do you think?
Go ahead.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you think they're really going to? I mean, what do you think Hazelbaker's role is going to be? I mean, I'm really kind of. I'm wondering if he's going to get a couple starts per week. If he's just going to be like a bench guy. I mean, and you got Tommy Pham in there too. I mean, what do you think Hazelbaker's going to get like in April?
Not much. I mean, you know, you're looking at a time period. You know, the Cardinals. Well, I think we mentioned it last time. They have 3 days off in the first 2 weeks. You know, so there's not like they're going to need to rest people. They've got Moss, who's probably going to need to play some outfield if Matt Holliday's playing first or vice versa. Like you say, you got to get Pham in there. I just think Hazelbaker's kind of along for the ride right now. Now, maybe not. I mean, he could come along and surprise people. Maybe he gets a key pinch hits. I bet he'll get a start somewhere along the way, maybe one of those, you know, end of the series type of games. Yeah. I think he's pretty much there until I think the hope is, and I haven't read anything about the strain and stuff like that. My guess is the hope is that Ruben Tejada is just a 2-week thing, And then in 2 weeks, he comes off the DL. Hazelbaker goes down. That's my feeling for it. I think he's got all his options. I think they just added him to the 40-man this offseason. So
yeah, he's pretty much, I think, what Cardinals farm said in 11 months, he's kind of went from signing with the being a minor league signing to being a major league baseball player. So I agree with that. Because for me, you think about squeezing him in there. I mean, unless there's an injury, which we don't need, baseball gods. You know, Tommy Pham's going to get his shot. You got Piscotty, Grichuk. You know, Holiday isn't going to play at first base every day. You know, they can say that Matt Adams won the job, but Moss is going to get some time. So, and Moss can play left field. I think they're kind of edging Moss kind of into the outfield. So I think Hazelbaker might, he can obviously be that guy off the bench. You know, the Cardinals always can use that little infusion of power off the bench late. I just wonder how he's going to do if he's ice cold for a couple games and he comes off the bench in like the third game of the season and he goes, okay, now go ahead and bat against major leaguers in a real game. And he might get a start before Tejada comes back. It just depends on how long Tejada's out. If it is 2 weeks, I can see him maybe getting one start.
Yeah, I mean, Matheny's going to get him a start. That's Mike Matheny's method of, managing people. And especially early on, it doesn't hurt too much to give a guy like that a start. He'll have a memory and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but you never know. He might get out there and hit like 3 home runs and then sit the next day.
That's possible too, I guess.
But when I look at Hazelbaker, I think I see a guy who can give the Cardinals a little late inning option, maybe get a start. Maybe do something to build off, hopefully another call up later in the season. I mean, I see this as kind of like an extended cup of coffee. You know, there's a couple weeks, he comes up, he might get maybe 4 to 5 at bats, but you never know. It could be like Garcia did in his first 2 years of the team. He might put those few at bats to really good use and contribute a big hit or two.
And he could. I mean, it's, it has not been unheard of for, heck. The idea, I think, in general and somewhat time, was that Albert Pujols was only going to be up for a couple of weeks.
Only for a couple of weeks before Mike Bonilla got hurt, and McGuire told La Russa, hey, that guy kind of looks good.
Yeah, I mean, there was that idea he'd come back if Bonilla was healthy, and it didn't obviously happen that way. I don't know if that was – there's a lot of legend around that. Well, I don't know
how much
of that is really accurate, but most of it, I think, probably is. I don't see that, Hazelbaker's going to be this, he might be a flash in the pan, get a nice string going, but he's not going to become this superstar all of a sudden. It's a good story. It's nice to know. There was some concern, I think, earlier in the week. Rick Hummel's writing stuff about Hazelbaker making the roster over Pham. Now, that would have been pretty much insane.
Would have been tricky. Yeah, very tricky because, Pham, the way that he finished up last year and what he could do for this team, I mean, that'd be telling Pham, hey, we liked your promise, but your contacts don't work, so go ahead and stay down in Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, you're like somebody was pointing out on Twitter, you're taking not only the guy that has the more tools in Pham and rejecting him, but the guy that's done it in the major leagues, and you're basically saying, hey, this guy had a good spring training, so we're going to put him on there. That doesn't – it didn't matter. I mean, it turned out – I don't think that was ever really – I know Rick Hummel wrote that. And I hate to be a little bit almost blasphemous, but I'm afraid that I don't think Rick Hummel's what he used to be.
It's okay to say.
He's a legend, and he's still 100% better than a lot of us. Well, he's 100% better than all of us. He's a lot better than most that do his job. I don't think he's got his fastball anymore. So
yeah, I mean, this is a guy in Pham who finished up really in September. He was. Slugging, 661. He had 4 home runs. I mean, this is a guy who really started to come into his own when he got the time to hit. I mean, he's also a guy that, if you put Holiday at first and you want to put Pham in the outfield, he gives you a better defensive outfield. So I think the time is definitely now. But I think if Pham is healthy, you got to see what he's got because his time is definitely, he is in a spring chicken. He's 28 years old. He just turned 28. I'm sure that he doesn't have, I mean, I guess he has options left because he just kind of made his debut. Was it the year before last or the last year was his debut?
Year before last, I think he got a little bit.
2 at-bats.
Yeah, barely anything.
I think with Pham, I think he gives you some tools that obviously, as you point out, Hazelbaker just doesn't. And I look for Fan to get a real shot this year if he can stay healthy, because the Cardinals have a good little mix of outfielders if they find a little spot for all of them.
Yeah, it's going to be, that's the thing. This roster, and I agree with you, they wanted Diaz to play every day.
And that's
a very reasonable thing. But then again, you look at the fact that you've got, five legitimate outfielders, and that doesn't count Brandon Moss, who can play outfield and who has been an outfielder in the past. I don't know. You've got a whole bunch of people covering the outfield, and you don't have a whole lot going on the infield. In fact, what happens? Don't even knock on, I'd hate to even mention it, but, there's nothing at third base right now except for Matt Carpenter.
I talked about that a couple weeks, two, 3 weeks ago when I was talking about maybe getting Freeze, if Matt Carpenter goes down, if you think Johnny Peralta was a loss, if Matt Carpenter goes down, then you're pushing, Jerko to third, and your shortstop second base depth goes down, and then you might be looking at Jacob Wilson getting a big promotion before he's ready. Carpenter, that's the one guy that this team cannot afford to lose. And, and you think about infield depth and, who's ready to really come up and make an impact. Patrick Wisdom is not really close, there's just not a lot of guys down there. Maybe, like I said, outside of Jacob Wilson, who kind of started making some waves last year, this team is pretty thin at third base. And as we can see, we're very thin at shortstop. I mean, they don't really believe in Diaz yet.
Again, the strength of this team has been, will be, for quite some time. It's going to be pitching. And that's one of the reasons that the Cardinals were linked to a guy like Ben Zobrist. I mean, I'm not saying they should have gotten him, because I think that that's a contract that might go south in a year or two. But there's no doubt that when you look at this roster, he would have been a very, very valuable, at least this year, and especially with Peralta and now Tejada out. So it's one of those things that even if Mo doesn't want to go out and sign the big names at shortstop or third base or whatever, he's going to have to, I think, start letting loose of some assets and maybe trading for some sort of prospects. Jurickson Profar has been a name that has come up a number of times in the past. Of course, there was that, legendary rumored trade of Profar for Tavares, two or three years back. There's really not room for him in Texas right now, and that's a guy that, it would cost, it would cost quite a significant amount. I don't know what the deal would have to be, but it's a guy that if he looks like he's back and healthy, should be a kind of a consideration for Mo. I mean, that's a guy, like I said, a young talent that would break the bank, and that seems to be something that Mo needs to look for, I think. Even if they're not going to be able to develop these middle infielders and these corner out infielders, like third base, then they're going to have to go get them somewhere, and it's better to get some prospects, some guys that, are up and coming and have some talent than spending a whole lot of money in the free agent market.
Yeah, I mean, Profar, he hasn't played, and I think since 2013, I think he's been out for, but he's 23 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy that if you give him the right, chance to show himself, then he could be a definite big guy. Then you ask yourself, is Profar give you something more than what Aledmys Diaz has? But it never hurts to get younger at a position, because you just give these guys a shot and see what you got. At this point, I'm not even sure what the Texas Rangers would really value Jurickson Profar. I don't know what they're really counting on him for. I mean, they still have Elvis Andrus at shortstop, for the foreseeable future. So I don't really know. I mean, if that was a thing where they could go after him, it couldn't hurt. I mean, Profar is more exciting than going after Tejada.
Well, yeah, that is true.
I mean, obviously. I mean, just as far as the excitement's concerned. But, I'm really looking forward to seeing, I don't know how much they want to see in Diaz, but he's a guy that, if you're going to give, Pete Cosma a whole season at the position in 2013, if Diaz goes down and starts clipping around Memphis pitching like he was in August, I think you should see him back up here. Unless, Jerko's hitting really well and he's not making too many errors and he's playing fine. I'm really waiting to see how long it takes for Diaz to get back up here. But then again, Tejada may only be on the DL for 15 days. So April is going to be a very interesting month for the shortstop position.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's an interesting thing. I mean, you knew that with Peralta out that it was going to be kind of interesting as well, but then to lose the guy that you just go out and get, That's tough. I mean, again, it's, you know, we keep thinking we're going to run out of these injuries, and they continue to come along. I don't know that you can. I mean, again, Peralta, I don't think that's a situation where you can blame anybody. But we've had, as somebody pointed out today to me, I don't remember where, a lot of quad, a lot of things like that over the last couple of years. Is that a situation where they have to, you know, I know, revamp what they're doing with stretching and things of that nature? Because, you know, we had Adams have one last year, Holiday. Some of that's a fluke, but, you know, you get three, four, five of those, you start thinking maybe there's a pattern here.
Well, you get Tommy Pham last mm-hmm. spring, too. He had one. I mean, I know Mozeliak said that they hired some kind of guy that's supposed to specialize in conditioning and training. I think that was more geared at Matt Carpenter, the way he kind of ran himself into the ground mid-season. But, yeah, there's a lot of quad injuries, man. You know, you have a lot of guys who, you know, Matt Holiday had never missed that much time in his whole career. And this is a guy that stays in ridiculous shape. And, you know, it afflicted Tommy Pham for almost half a season. I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, if you're losing players, I mean, I wish we can find a thumb doctor, because we were losing Yadier Molina and Peralta, but those are just more freak injuries. But, yeah, the quad thing, I mean, if you see another guy go down, you know, in this first 2 months, you're going to have to say, okay, are you guys just not stretching your quads? Are you guys not working them enough? Are you guys, like, trying to, you know, do leg extension with, like, you know, 500 pounds on the thing? I don't know what these guys are doing, but it is, last year was kind of the year of the quad. I mean, it's not one something you can really deny. I mean, it's good to see Mo go out and get somebody that can help with conditioning and make sure that these guys aren't overdoing it. Because a lot of times, as a guy who's, you know, been deep into fitness for about half his life, I can tell you that if you overdo it, you're pretty much going to be riding yourself towards an injury, because a muscle can only take so much wear and tear. And if, you know, a guy like Carpenter is hitting the weights, he's running, he's playing every day, that's where you really run into a problem. And that's what we've seen with Randall Grichuk, where he lifts so much and he works out. He gets hurt in the weight room. I know Matt Holiday hurt himself 1 year in the weight room. He was only out for maybe a couple games. But, you know, you can't overdo it. And you think about these guys. I mean, they don't play a physical contact sport, but they still play a physical sport, you know, 3 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week. So I think it's just maybe this telling, having somebody in this team go, hey guys, let's skip the gym today, let's just go for like a light jog, don't overdo it, because I think that could be a product of what these guys are doing if they're going at it too hard.
Trotta has an MRI tomorrow in Pittsburgh. We'll find out maybe a little bit more there. There's no real idea right now how long he's going to be out, but, you know, he's not going to start the season with the Cardinals. And the same can be said for Jordan Walden. You know, we kind of have talked about him.
The enigma.
Yeah, I mean, he looked pretty good most of the spring. He was really adding to that bullpen. Then he hits the lat, and then he's got, I don't even know exactly what the issue is that's keeping him on the DL right now. I don't think it was shoulder. It was a shoulder issue, which is always fun to hear for a pitcher.
The lingering shoulder.
You kind of wonder, as soon as the word shoulder comes along, you really start to wonder if you're going to see Walden this year, in which case the Cardinals basically paid, you know, whatever the amount of money for, you know, a 2-year contract, and they got a month's worth of stuff out of him. That's, you know, that's the luck of the draw. That's baseball to some degree. And hopefully that we're, you know, over-exaggerating and we'll see some Walden this year. But, you know, that's a tough thing to lose. I mean, that kind of makes the bullpen it's still a good bullpen, but not quite as good as it was.
Yeah, because you don't know what you have in Matt Bowman. I mean he had a great spring. I'm glad he made the team. I'm kind of a proponent for Sam Tuivalala to get a chance at some time this year. But, yeah, I mean, Jordan Walden, he just gave you another guy who had closer experience, could set up. He's got that wicked motion that throws hitters off. And this is a guy who closed, you know, 32 games in 2011. He's always had a good ERA. He strikes out a lot of guys. He's a multifaceted pitcher. So when you lose him, all you've gotten to date is 12 games and 10.1 innings out of him. So, I mean, I think he hurt himself on last April 30th. Yeah. And he just never came back, tried and tried. And like you said, the shoulder injury, if anybody was around for Mark Mulder, let's just put the shoulder injury is kind of like an opera. It just goes on and on, and they come back and they try, and it's just a lot of effort, but not a lot of return. So with Walden, you could really see the Cardinals just not getting much out of him because his contract's up at the end of the season. He's a free agent. You know, I don't think the Cardinals are going to – they don't need two breakable pitchers on their roster. They already have Jaime. I'm not even sure they're going to bring him back. But Walden could be a lost cause. I mean, at this point, you just don't know if you can trust him coming back. You like the idea of what he can do, and you like what he does when he's healthy, but we haven't seen that in almost a year. So, you know, Matt Bowman gets a shot. I mean, you know, Viva Alberto's wrote a column that's saying it's maybe a blessing in disguise that – Walden went down and Bowman comes up. I guess they've seen something in Bowman that they really like. I haven't seen much in the guy. I mean, I'm glad he had a good spring, but, you know, spring training stats, you got to take him with a measure of salt. But Bowman, he's obviously trying to prove himself. So hopefully he keeps his bullpen strong. Hopefully, Seung Oh becomes a weapon that we don't know what's coming, but we haven't seen him pitch, obviously, against major league talent. So the bullpen looked to me like a very big strength, and I wrote that if Walden was healthy, he just makes this bullpen just monstrous. But now that he's going to be out for an uncertain amount of time, it kind of goes down to just like you said, kind of solid, but not just, you know, bulletproof like it was.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, Bowman comes in. He's going to be the Carlos Villanueva role, which I kind of thought was going to be Tyler Lyons. I'm still not. I hope that Matheny's not going to use Lyons as a loogie because I just don't think that's.
Oh no, that's a total waste of his talent.
Well,
I mean,
and he's never been just a guy that just completely shuts down lefties. He does well against them.
Yeah, I mean, he's also a guy. I mean, he's a guy that I just thought fit the Villanueva role to a T because he's been better out of the bullpen. He's a guy that can't pitch for like 3 or 4 days, but he didn't come out and give you 3 or 4 innings when somebody gets blown up, and it's going to happen. So I really hope they just abandon it unless they eventually bring up that Dean Kiekhaefer. I mean, the guy that's been doing it, you know, in Memphis. So, yeah, I'm with you. That would be another Matheny head scratcher if he uses Lyons for only like one batter a game. I think even Lyons would be like, are you seriously taking me out? I could pitch to like 9 more guys. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, you start looking at him, and I mean, he has been good. Like I said, good against lefties. He's in his career, he's living it to him. To 199 average, but you know, again, that's just not necessary. He's giving up 4 home runs to the lefties too, so it's not like he's untouchable there. I just feel like when I've watched Lyons, that he's a guy that kind of takes a little bit to get into a groove. He's not necessarily the guy that's going to get the first batter out. You know, maybe that's wrong, and maybe he'll do better. And again, this is a guy that, you know, Lyons is a great guy to come in when, you know, the inning has 2 lefties, you know, 2 out of 3 that first guy batters are left-handed. He can pitch to all 3 guys and not really be, you know, you don't have to do that, you know, bring a lefty in, bring a righty in, bring a lefty in type of thing. But, you know, we've talked about it before, I think, that, you know, Joe Kelly, Shelby Miller, that long relief role that the Cardinals continue to think that they need tends to not get used as much. They use Villanueva a little bit more than they use like a Joe Kelly or something of that nature. But if they use, you know, Lyons and Bowman in that role, that's kind of tough, you know, because there's not necessarily going to be time for one of those guys to get much work, much less 2 of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be tough because you have guys that, you know, that they need to get the work or else they're going to come out. You know, you can't get mad for a guy if he hasn't pitched in a week and a half and he comes out and gets rocked. You know, they need the reps. That basically needs that Matheny can use Seth Maness not 7 times a week, maybe 5 times a week if you have these 2 guys. But it did, I mean, you know, I really just want to know the roles. I mean, I would love, I mean, I'm not a guy that says, you know, the closer has to close, but, you know, I'd love to see how he starts to use his bullpen. You know, when does Bowman pitch, like you said, when does Lyons pitch? When does the secret's going to be? Obviously, he's going to be your setup guy, but where is O pitch? Is it going to be a 7th, 8th inning, 9th inning? It's just with Walden, it was kind of seemed to be kind of set. You know, those guys were your 3 late inning guys if he had a lead, and everything else would kind of just move into its shape. But now, I mean, in the offseason, I thought, okay, it's time to make Lyons into what he is best at, which is coming out of the bullpen. He's very good out of the bullpen, but now. I mean, if he's used as a loogie, I mean, you might as well just trade the guy. I mean, you know, because he's obviously proven that he can start, that he can be a good reliever, but he's not a loogie, you know. And I'm not a big proponent for the loogie unless the guy's really good at it and he's done it. I mean, even the guy, Dean Kiekhaefer down there, he hasn't done it in the major league level. So, you know, maybe see how you do without it. Maybe just kind of mix in these guys. Keep your bullpen fresh is what I would do. You got a lot of guys down there, even without Walden, who are fresh, who can pitch, who, you know, you don't want to wear down Sechrist and Rosenthal. You know, you got O, you got this mix of pitchers that can go deep into games, they can stretch. I just hope Matheny trusts all of them. If you're going to have them on the roster, you got to trust him. You can't just trust Maness from the fifth to the eighth and then just go with the other guys. You have to trust some of these guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how he uses them. And if he limits some, he trusts some more than others. We know he does that, but it just depends on how much he trusts some pitchers over the others. Because I think he should use them all if you're going to have them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're just going to have – it is going to be interesting because there are some different – faces and different ideas of how Matheny is going to use these guys, but you know, it just doesn't feel like you need that two long guys because this team, you know, knock on wood and everything else, but this is a team that should have five starters that can, you know, for most of the time go six innings at least and maybe longer, and then you turn it over to those old Broxton, Rosenthal types. You don't necessarily need a guy that's going to be able to eat two or three innings on a regular basis. You hope, at least. You know, and it's not like Mike Matheny is going to pinch hit, you know, at a time, you know, like in the fourth inning when Michael Walker's on the mound because there's a runner on first or a runner on third with nobody out. You know, I mean, he's going to let Walker hit or all that kind of stuff. He's not going to be creative, if you will, and use these guys long worry. So, I don't know. You know, I don't expect we'll see a whole lot of Bowman because, I mean, he is, you know, a Rule 5 guy. He's not necessarily a guy that would have made the major leagues had it not been for that idea that you have to keep him or send him back to the Mets. I think the Cardinals like him enough to not want to send him back. But the kicker, you know, the key is going to be what happens when, you know, if Walden gets healthy or, you know, if he starts to struggle, you need a guy like Tuivasa, I mean, or a Sokolovich. I mean, guys that, you know, may be able to impact the major league team in a little different way. You know, we'll have to see how that goes. I have a feeling Bowman, if the Cardinals like Bowman that much, they may have to trade some sort of, you know, double-A guy over there for the right so they can drop him down to Memphis. But, you know, I just don't – I have problems imagining that Bowman's going to be on this roster – all year long. Yeah, I could be wrong, and like you said, he seems to have had a good spring, but I just have problems believing that, man. And maybe that's just, you know, some bias on my part.
I mean, really, they're just, you know, you don't know what this team is doing. You got the Holiday at first, you got the two swing guys. It just, you know, you really, and then that's why, folks, we want these real games to start so we can see what he's actually going to do and not just have all this potential. You know, yeah. I mean, like I said, you have the guys that have set roles like Rosenthal and Sechrist, and O is probably going to be one of those, maybe a seventh inning guy. But then, like you said, we have all these guys. Like Maness got lit up. You know, he didn't have a good spring. I mean, is he going to be a guy that gets used less or more? Are you going to see Seth Maness come into a game over your two long guys? It's just one of those things where I really wish that I could just flash forward to May 1st and go, okay, so who's fried and who's not?
Yeah. And, you know, whoever's fried still may come in.
Yes.
There was talk this week, and more Sunday. I think you got a little less. This is actually a fairly good week for the Cardinals. Maybe the best ball they played, which is good. I mean, if you're going to play your best ball at the end of spring, that's what you want to see. I mean, the Cardinals won Monday. I think they won Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and were rained out on Tuesday. And then that game, they were just trailing 1-0. So they played some good ball, but, you know, Monday or Tuesday, there was an article Derek Gould wrote about the fact that they were having a whole lot more team meetings this year than in previous years. I mean, to the point that Mike Matheny missed watching batting practice, which is something he never does because he was meeting with these core guys of Wainwright and all these kind of stuff. And it sounds like that not everybody was on the same page. There were some as the article called it, raw conversations. And maybe this is just kind of sorting out, kind of getting everybody in line, everybody getting ready for this season. But as Josh Gilliam and I talked about on UCB Radio last night, I think this is a big test for Mike Matheny because the whole selling point for Mike Matheny is that he can manage a clubhouse. It's not that he can manage a ball game. We know that. It's that he can manage a clubhouse. And if he can't manage the clubhouse, if the clubhouse is starting to become an issue, if there's chemistry problems there, or if there's, you know, questions about how people are doing stuff, like Maness not pitching enough, or, you know, like, you know, other things of that nature, you know, this is a good test, because if he can't write that, and I bet he will, I don't expect that it's going to blow up to be anything, but if it does, you know, that's the only reason that Mike Matheny's there.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be a leader in men, the kind of manager that these guys trust to do the right thing and be able to solve these messy problems. I mean, a lot of these ball players can go on the field and do their job and hit pitch and do that stuff. But when it comes off the field and you got some problems in your clubhouse, especially with the guys like Waino and Holiday and Molina, you know, guys that, you know, aging core talk or not, they are kind of getting, you know, into the different part of their career. And it could be a thing where they're, you know, that they want to make sure that they're still leaders, or they want to talk to Matheny about who should be leaders, and hey, can some of these other guys start stepping up? Because it could be them kind of calling to arms of the rest of this team that, hey, you know, we are being challenged here by the Cubs and the Pirates. Well, we need to make sure that we're good before we go into the six-month season. Because everybody knows it's hard to solve these things in the middle of the season. Everybody knows that winning is great, but what if you get into a losing streak? Then all of a sudden those raw emotions and feelings start coming out even more. If you get into a losing streak and the Cubs start to win and you start to lose, I think a lot of this comes from just the way that the division is kind of sorting to be a very competitive one. And you have guys like, well, Holiday's kind of, you know, he's heading towards an option year. Molina's getting older. How many more years can he catch? Waino, I mean, can he come back? Does he still have another two-inning season left in his arm? I think it's just more of a preseason prep, but it could be them kind of calling arms to the rest of the team and go, hey, are you guys ready to step up? As we might need you. We can't keep carrying the whole torch by ourselves. Or it could just be a big disagreement over somebody's bingo card. I don't know.
Yeah, again, it didn't sound like it was...
It didn't sound too drastic. It just sounded like something that and people are just going to try to make a big deal about it because of the offseason and because the Cardinals are being tested. You know, if this is one season or two, if this is two springs ago, it's probably not even a big deal. But now that, you know, the Cubs have pushed back and the division's kind of a big test and the Cardinals aren't even picked by a lot of people to win it, you know, now it's kind of like the Cardinals are up against that wall. Maybe they're making a big deal about this. Maybe the team's going to shake it off because they're not going to do that kind of thing. But you're right. This is a big test for Matheny. You know, he's got problems managing games. He's got problems managing a bullpen. But what he's supposed to, the way that he gets results is by having a team, you know, guys in that clubhouse that trust him to fix these kind of problems. And if he loses his clubhouse, we know how south that can go when you look around the league. When you look at Ryan Sandberg, I mean, he doesn't have quite the talent in Philadelphia that Matheny had, and he lost his team and he was gone. And, you know, Matheny's had great success since he's been here. But now that you're kind of entering a new horizon with, you know, the Cubs being competitive now for a while and the Pirates aren't going away. And, you know, it won't be too long. Well, okay, maybe 4 to 5 years before the Reds and the Brewers are really back into it. But those guys are just spoilers. So, I mean, nothing's going to come easy for the Cardinals because they are the Cardinals. So all that focus is going to fall on Matheny. And I've been an apologist for the guy while pointing out his flaws. And like you said, I mean, I think we both agree that he's, you know, a very good manager, but a lot of that, like you said, is built by his ability to solve these internal problems and keep the boat going forward no matter what happens. No matter if you get injuries, if some of your players underperform, if people forget how to hit home runs, and, you know, you're not scoring runs. Because if this team gets into a losing streak, even early on, and, you know, your shortstop's not giving you anything, and your outfield takes another blow, and you get kind of down. I mean, it's a long season, but, man, the thing about baseball is that you can play every day, but it's also a chance for you to lose another day. And then for those attentions to rise more. You know, when you lose in football or hockey, you kind of get a 3 days to kind of go, oh, man, that was bad. But in baseball, you don't get that break. You go at it every day, and it's kind of a constant grind. So this is definitely going to be a big test for Matheny. You're right.
Yeah, and again, like you say, it doesn't sound like it's terribly bad yet, but it's more of a tension, more of a conflict than we have heard about, at least, probably since Matheny got there. You know, there you would occasionally get these kind of things under Tony La Russa, but it's more than we've heard out of Matheny since he's been there. So, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. Yeah, it contrasted well for the media standpoint, because a lot of people picked that up. contrasted with the loosey-goosey fun stuff that the Cubs are doing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and really, that. You know, it's easy for spring training. I mean, if this stuff happens in the season, it might just be, okay, they had a closed meeting in the clubhouse, and then they had to, you know, it happens in every sport. But, you know, in spring training, when the news kind of runs dry and people need something to write about, and, ooh, if the Cardinals are having problems, and we can spin that into the aging core, having a conversation with the manager about, oh, you know, our backs are hurting, or whatever. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I think it was right in line for people to scoop it up and talk about it.
Yeah, it may have been. So we'll have to see if it becomes an issue. I don't know that it will. But, it, you know, it could. And that will make some interesting decisions for Joan Mozeliak. I see. Well, you know, like I said, we played good baseball the last couple weeks. We hit like 105 home runs today or something like that. So that was good to see. Maybe that led a little bit more credence to the idea that ballpark down there and whatever is going on this spring helped limit that. But this is still a team, I think, I don't think we feel that confident about this offense still. We didn't see anything this spring to make us feel like this is a team that's going to come out and just start hitting the ball around the ballpark. They might be able to do enough, but, you know, losing, you know, that shortstop position is tough, not really knowing what you're going to get still out of Matt Holliday or some of the others. You know, I believed in the whole bunch of ifs situation we've talked about quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that those ifs are going to go the Cardinals' way right now. And maybe that's just a little bit of negativity left over from that 2-week span where they couldn't win a ball game. But even though I still think this is probably a team that's going to be fine, boy, that you looking at it more and more, it's kind of like, are they going to be able to score enough runs?
Well, it just depends. I mean, I see this offense as being questionable and you can't trust it, but they could be a streaky offense. You're seeing they're hitting right now. But there's also a streak where they don't hit for a while. They score three or less runs over and over again. It's going to put a strain on your pitching. It's going to put a strain on your bullpen. We saw that happen in the last 2 years. And even, you know, in 2013, you had that great average with runners in scoring position, you know, 330. And in the last 2 years, it's 240, 250. So we know that came back down to earth. It's just going to come down to which players can exceed expectations. Can Steven Piscotty put together a year that's even greater than what Jason Hayward did in right field last year offensively? Can Randall Grichuk turn into that player? Can he stay healthy enough? I mean, I think if you say Randall Grichuk gets 550 at bats, I think he hits 30 home runs. But it's just can he hit those at bats? Can he hit those games played? What is Tommy Pham going to do? Can Matt Carpenter put on their power display, or is he going to go back to being just an on base guy, an average guy? You know, Holliday, I think if he gives us his 2014, we'll be fine. But then there's question marks like Brandon Moss, question marks like Matt Adams. What kind of hitter is Colton Wong going to be? Is he going to embrace the on-base percentage, or is he going to embrace his power? I know it's not easy to ask Colton Wong, hey, just swing away, kid, you're fine. But, you know, I mean, is he going to try to be a leadoff guy? Does he want to impress Matheny enough to try to maybe get on base more, take more pitches, try to lessen his swing? Or does he just go, to heck with it, I'm just going to swing away and embrace my power? Because that might lead to more strikeouts, and this lineup's got enough of those. But it's just, I mean, you know, anytime you write something critical about the Cardinals, Cardinal Nation thinks you're horrible. I mean, as I did when I wrote kind of an article for Redwood Rants, I said, I don't trust this Cardinals offense. And people were like, well, how dare you write so negative about this team? They're knights. They're kings out there. Might you think they're, you know, you're basically doing sacrilege whenever you write something bad about the Cardinals. But I look at this offense and I just see, and people will say that every team has it. Yeah, every team's got one or two things they want to hope works out well. The Cardinals seem to have four or five. They kind of seem to have, let's hope shortstop goes well. Let's hope Matt Carpenter doesn't get hurt. Let's hope our center fielder's elbow doesn't blow up. Can our new guy in right field, can he do what he did over half a season? What is going on at first base? We know Molina and Brian Peña aren't going to give you a lot offensively other than a batting average. So it just tells you, where is that oomph going to come from? I mean, no offense to Hazelbaker, but I'm not going to look for him to get enough starts to even prove what he can do. Pham, will he get enough time? It just, when you start you know, when you look back into that, I mean, let's put it this way, folks. You look back at the MV3 days, you knew what you were getting. You knew Scott Rowland was going to do this. You knew Jim Edmonds was going to do this. You knew Pujols was going to do that. You knew Vina was going to get on base to a certain degree. You know, Edgar Renteria was going to hit for average steal bases. Now you don't know where all that's coming from. You know Carpenter is going to be good. I think Carpenter is the one guy that I can trust to stay healthy, hit for average, you know, hit at least 280, get on base like heck, maybe hit some power. But everybody else, you know, you don't know. I mean, everybody got a quad injury last year. You have a lot of guys who are kind of could be facing their last years here. You know, Moss and is on a 1-year deal. Adams is kind of on a 1-year arbitration deal. Holiday's looking at an option. You know, you have a team kind of in transition offensively. Their pitching's fine. I mean, even with some injuries, they're fine. They're going to compete. They're not going to be historically great like last year, but I just see a lot of questions, and it's not like I'm trying to, you know, create clickbait articles. I look at this offense, and if you sit back and look at it, I mean, it's just a little bit shaky. I'm not sure I can trust a lot of it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. There's a lot of things that we need to see on a regular basis, and that's the thing. I mean, with spring, you can look at the numbers, but so often, given when they play, you don't really get a chance to watch it on a regular basis. I mean, you know, people are working, people are doing other things. You don't necessarily get a chance to watch it and really get a feel for what's going on and given the situation. So, you know, we can watch the next couple of weeks. You get those games, some early games against the NL Central. You can start getting a feel for, I mean, again, you can't draw huge conclusions out of 2 weeks of play, but you can get a little bit better idea of whether this team is really going to be doing something offensively or not, especially when you start out. I mean, you got Pittsburgh, but you got some games against Milwaukee in there. I'm not sure. You may have a series against Cincinnati in that span. You know, you're going to be playing some teams that aren't necessarily, I mean, Pittsburgh's obviously going to be a strong contender, and you run into Francisco Liriano on opening day. Oh, but then you go to Atlanta, the Braves are going to be bad, the Brewers, you got the Reds before you hit the Cubs. You know, that first 2 weeks, you should win some games because you're playing some teams that aren't that going to be that good. So that's going to be an interesting situation. I mean, if they struggle over the first couple of weeks, then I think there's some real reason to panic. Or not panic, but at least be concerned.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to face a lot of your buddies. I mean, you're going to face a lot of your interdivision teams and get a good test. You're going to, like you said, face the Pirates right off the bat. You got the Brewers, the Reds, the Cubs all in the first month, and then you kind of go against the Diamondbacks and the Nationals to finish off the month. But then the Pirates come into town in the early May. So, I mean, you're going to get a measure for what this offense can do and what the pitching can withstand. I mean, it isn't like you're going to be getting a completely soft month to start, but you're going to get a chance to see your team against the NL Central, against the teams you're going to be facing the most. You're going to face your biggest competition within the first 2 weeks. You're going to face the Pirates and the Cubs, and you're going to face the other two teams that are supposedly lesser. But the other teams are going to give you, I mean, they're going to give you some problems, because, I mean, they're going to look at those games as like the World Series in April, because they know that long-term they're not really going to be contending this year, so they're going to try to wreck your plans. And, you know, you're going to be getting a stiff test against a lot of different pitching. I mean, you get those first six games, which seem to be played over like 19 days, but you get two off days in the first week, and then you come home. So I just think, I mean, people will be shouting small sample sizes if you do well, and if you do wrong, you're just like, oh, see, this is why Mozeliak should have gotten somebody in the offseason. So it's not really a good, like, happy premise. You just got to win games, and you got to score. You know, you got to prove that you can score runs, and you got to figure out who's best where, because the Cardinals have a lot of positions that are in flux. You don't know who's going to play first base on a regular basis. They say it's Adams, but Holiday's played there a lot. Where's Pham going to play? Is Hazel Baker fit into it? You know, where does Jericho play? Is he going to be at short a lot? Are they actually going to give Greg Garcia a big stretch? I mean, they're obviously paying Jericho a kind of salary that he could start at shortstop for a while, but it just depends on who gets out there. I mean, what is your lineup? Do you stick with Carpenter in the leadoff spot? What if 3 weeks into the season you're really struggling, like last season at the end of April, They moved Carpenter to the second spot. I think they should have moved him to the third spot so he can actually be a big producer. You might see something like that because the Cardinals were struggling to score last season. I don't remember, you know, Hayward was in a big funk. The whole lineup wasn't scoring, so they kind of mixed it up. But, you know, it's just it's. I wish I could tell you what this team is going to do. I know they're going to pitch. I just don't know if they're going to hit enough. I mean, if you told me at the end of the April they'd be, you know, way over 500, I mean, because of their pitching, I wouldn't be surprised. If they told me they're going to do it because of their hitting, I'd be very surprised.
You know, I think we were all a little concerned. You know, Wainwright hadn't been all that sharp. Walker hadn't been all that sharp. But, you know, these last 3 days, and counting the Nationals game where Wainwright pitched fairly well before it was rained out, you know, things have looked a lot better. And, you know, again, small sample size, but that helps to go into the season with a little bit of more optimism that maybe this team can put things together. I mean, again, the Mets and they beat the Mets 3-1. They beat the Marlins 3-0. We may see a lot of that. We may see a lot of 3-2, 3-1.
Yeah.
You know, I don't Definitely. Know that, you know, we're not going to see, you know, like today was 9-1. Don't expect to see that very much. Not even if we played, you know, all the games in Colorado. But, you know, if they can score enough, you know, again, a 9-1 game and a 3-0 game, they all count the same. So, we'll just have to, like I said, we'll have to wait and see. That's just going to be the big thing.
You know, I always just say, you know, early on in the first 2 months, you got to beat the bad teams. You got to play even against the good teams, you know, and you hope that changes as the season goes on. You hope you start playing really good against the good teams while still taking care of business. But, I mean, that's kind of what you have to do. Early season, I always just think you just got to survive. It's a six-month season. You got over 160 games. You got a long season to go. So you just got to get in there and prove that you can hit. I mean, you know, you don't want to see the first 2 weeks be like, you know, 2-1 and 1-0. And, you know, where you're putting all that pressure on your pitching. And, you know, your pitching can be great, but, you know, as we both can tell, it's not going to happen like it happened last year. You're going to have to depend on some hitting. And, hey, if Brandon – I mean, and you can't talk about the offense unless you say if. If Brandon Moss becomes the guy he was in Oakland 2 years ago, then this team could be different. If Holiday can do what he does and get on base, crank doubles – you know, if they can get some big hits, if they can get some production from the 4, 5, and 6 spot, I think the first 1, 2, 3 is going to be great. You should have Carpenter, Piscotty, Holiday. I mean, I don't think they're going to move Holiday out of the 3 spot. So those guys, I kind of trust those guys to do their job. When those guys get on base or generate something, can the 4, 5, and 6 guys knock them in? That's going to be the biggest thing for this team. Who hits in the middle of the order? Can they hit in the middle of the order? Can they get the big hit when you need it? You know, are you just going to be one of those teams that strands the bases loaded, strands two people on? You know, just beat the bad teams, hold your own against the good teams. Hopefully you get healthy. You know, nobody's going to be cheering the return of Ruben Tejada, but hopefully you can just survive. Peralta gets back. Maybe if there's a trade available, I hope Mo pulls the trigger if his offense is struggling. If Matheny sees a chance to shake the lineup up, you should do it because – as good as Carpenter is in the leadoff spot, and I'll say this, it's really hard to move him out of there. He's a major league ball player. If he knows how to hit, he can hit anywhere. So if it helps your lineup to move him down and make your lineup more productive to where when guys get on base, oh, there's Carpenter. Now he can crank a double into the gap and get him home. I mean, you might have to make that switch. It's going to be interesting to see not just how Matheny handles the clubhouse, but how he becomes a better in-game manager, in-season manager. Can he react to a lineup that's not hitting? We're not going to look to John Mabry for any answers, I don't think. So it just depends on how Matheny can react. Can he see a problem? Can he not worry about feelings? Oh, I'm sorry, Carpenter, but you make a lot of money. You're going to hit third. Shut up. You know, it's one of those things where can he make that kind of move to better his team? I mean, like I said, if you're going to move Carpenter, don't move him down to the 2 spot. Move him down to the 3, man. I mean, you know, give him in a spot. Move him down in the most productive spot in the lineup. So it's just going to be adjustment. Can this Cardinal team adjust if there's problems? I mean, you can only have so many team meetings before your clubhouse becomes a hazard zone. So, I mean, it's a long season for a good reason, and it's a long season for a bad reason. The first 2 months are going to be really telling to see what this team can do offensively. I know they're going to pitch. It's just everybody's holding their breath about this offense.
Yeah, that is going to be it. I mean, That's really all we can.
If you told me, hey, we're going to average 4.5, 5 runs the first 2 months, okay, we're good. I mean, I'd say we're going to be in first place, the Cubs, because I don't think the Cubs can hang with our pitching unless another injury happens. But it's just the Cubs can hit. They can assault other teams. I mean, of course, they need things to go well, too. But it's like comparing the Cubs to the Cardinals offensively, they're not worrying about too many ifs. I mean, if they have ifs, maybe it's in their, you know, their left field defense. It's in the depth of their rotation. It's in, you know, guys like Lackey. Can Lackey pitch in Wrigley Field? Is he going to have that same luck when he's not pitching in Busch Stadium as much? You know, they have question marks on their offense, but they just don't have as many as the Cardinals. So it just, I mean, you're going to see a nice mix of teams. You're going to see teams that are built on pitching and teams that are built on offense, and it's going to be a true test of the adage of people that say that pitching wins the division. Well, we're going to see if that proves right this year.
Yep, and that's the clash of philosophies that's been battle brewing. I mean, the Cubs have gone with the offense, and the Cardinals have gone with the pitching. You know, again, the Cubs are an interesting thing. I mean, they've had a lot of loosey-goosey time over there in Arizona. That it's kind of one of those things, it's all about results. You know, if you win, that means he was loose and everybody was great, and that's why they won. If they don't win, they weren't paying attention, and they weren't focused, and they weren't professional, and they didn't treat the game right. And so, you know, take it for what it's worth. But it does seem to me that, maybe it's wishful thinking, but it feels like that they're kind of cruising. I mean, they're set up as this team that's going to win it all. They kind of have this, you know, have fun attitude out there. It just feels like that's a recipe for kind of blowing up in their face. And maybe it won't.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
It always makes for a good story until you start playing games. Mm-hmm. And if the Cubs go into a big losing streak, all that fly by the W and T-shirt thing gets burned up. Because, you know, it's easy to build those kind of stories up in the spring training when it's just exhibition games. Everybody's kind of stretching out. Everybody's getting ready. But when you kind of get in the season and you have a losing streak, that's a true test of a team. When you have a sustained period of bad play, whether it's your defense, it's your pitching, you're not hitting enough. Because, you know, for all the hoopla about how they hit, the Cubs didn't really hit that much better than the Pirates last year. I mean, all three teams were kind of like equal. I know the Cubs got better as the year went on with, you know, Kyle Schwarber and the way their offense kind of took off, and they got Ben Zobrist now. They have more of a complete lineup, but you still have to have things go right. I mean, they're still an injury or two away from being a suspect offense, and offense that strikes out a lot. So people that want to coin the Cubs, you know, the champions right now, I mean, it's just about as crazy as coining the Cardinals champions last year. You got to play the games. All those kind of cool, fun stories only survive if you keep winning. And in this league, nothing is certain because you play so many games. You know, I mean, I make the comparison a lot, but, you know, in other sports, you play half as much or you play 10th as much. You just don't play as much in those other games. In this sport, you play every day, and there's not a lot of time to go, well, okay, well, we had that feel-good story in March, but now that's just been like decades ago. So it just depends on which team. I mean, we're all going to face each other in the first month of the season. I mean, I'm not going to say April means everything, but it's just which team can kind of get that big head start and get some confidence brewing.
Yeah, if somebody takes off, it could be huge. But we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. First base, who plays it for the most part? I mean, just opening day doesn't necessarily mean anything. We got Lariano, the lefty, on the mound. You know, it could mean that Holiday plays first. Could mean Matt Adams. Matt Adams has hit Lariano well in the past. But, you know, out of this spring, after you've seen Moss and after you've seen Adams and after you've seen Holiday out there, who do you think is going to, especially in the first month or two, is going to see the most time over there at the corner?
You know, I almost want to say that, unfortunately, it's going to be Adams. I just think the team is going to give him a good push. Obviously, they're kind of moving away from Moss there. I think they want to push Moss more into the outfield, I guess, somewhere. Maybe mix him in left with Pham, but or Grichik. But I really think that even though I think Holiday can get some time, I mean, if Holiday can prove himself good defensively, he could play a lot there. I just think they're going to give Adams a good chance to prove himself. As Adams, you know, he's in arbitration control. You want to see what he's got. Maybe he plays a lot and he hits well and you can trade him, you know, maybe get something for him if his stock goes up. But I think my gut tells me that Adams is going to get a lot of time there the first month or two of the season because, as you said earlier, you know, it's early. You can afford to give guys a little bit more of a look. I wish it was Moss, because I think Moss has the better bat, even though what he did last year. I just think the team needs power, and I think Moss gives you more of that promise than Adams. But my gut tells me that they're going to be going with Adams a lot just to see what he's got.
Yeah, that, I mean, there's some good stories coming out about Adams. He seems to have hit well going down the stretch. Yeah, I feel like you're probably right. They're going to give him as much chance as they can. And for maybe more than one reason. I mean, if Adams does really well starting off, maybe he becomes trade bait. I don't know. If he's hitting well enough, then maybe he doesn't have to be because he's helping the team. Adams obviously has a great pop. He's young still. There's very good things to go for that. And Moss has a chance to play some outfield. And be that guy off the bench. Maybe he's a little bit better at being that guy off the bench than Adams is. I don't know. But it does feel like I said, I think on one place to ask me about it, I said Holliday was going to play 95% in the outfield. I'm not 100% sure that that's – I'm not 100% sure that's the case anymore. I feel like that we may see a lot more of Holliday at first base than I originally expected.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it was a folk story last season, it was a possibility this spring. I think you're going to see a lot more. I mean, I like to see him, even though, Adams four singles against Laureano to be damned. I mean, I'd like to see Holliday against Laureano there. I mean, I think he should bat against lefties. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely some weight to that he's going to play a lot more than people think. And if that does prove the case, and that's great. It just kind of leaves Matt Adams in kind of a no man's land, because unlike Brandon Moss, he can't play in their position. He plays first base, and he's probably, out of all three guys, he's probably the best defensively. I mean, it's not Gold Glove worthy, but he's the best defensively if you're worried about your infield defense, which when it comes to, who's throwing from short or who's throwing from third, it just depends on what you want to go with. If you want to give Adams a real shot to see what he's got, then you're going to have to run with him. But I think Holliday is going to edge more into that first base conversation than Brandon Moss.
Yeah, probably so. And again, it's hard to know. I mean, it gives options for Mike Matheny, which again, not necessarily the best thing, but we'll try it and see. As we continue to say, it's just one of those things we're going to have to wait and see, because I don't know that spring totals a whole lot. Spring shouldn't tell you a whole lot. I mean, all the variables that go into this, all the things that happen, you can't really. You could take some lessons out of spring, but not a whole lot of them, and you gotta be very careful about what you apply. Starting Sunday, the games count for real. That's gonna be fun. It's gonna be a big day. I still feel like it should be on Monday instead of Sunday, but that's just me. I think it's going to be fun. And again, the first 2 weeks are huge to get off to a good start. And it would be very nice to have a game or two or three game lead even, if you wanted to get greedy, before the Cubs came into town. The 18th or whatever that may be. Michael Walker is going to be the second starter this year. He's going to go, it looks like, right after Wainwright. It looks like it's the rotation's going to be, I assume, Wainwright, Walker, Leak, Garcia, and then Martinez. Is that the way you had to set it up?
Yeah, I mean, with these guys, I mean, I can see that they kind of want to spread it out. I mean, I'm not sure I'd throw Waka so soon, but hey, you're going to see what the guy's got. You're going to see if he can build off that last spring training start. So I don't really have a problem with that lineup, especially to start the season out when there's so many off days.
Part of me still. I get why they're doing it. I get why they've got Carlos Martinez in the five star, because that's just one or two less starts throughout the season for him, and not to run the risk on that arm. But the way that he pitches, boy, you'd really like to see him running after Wainwright, I think, in a perfect world. And maybe that's what we'll see in 2017 after he's had a chance to really develop a little bit more. Get another year older, but it's hard to believe that the guy that very likely has the best stuff right now on the rotation, maybe second to Wainwright, maybe not, is going to be your fifth starter.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to the first month, you're really just trying to just build and see what you have. So I think as I mean, for me, I think Carlos Martinez is a dark horse for the Cy Young. So I think you have two Cy Young worthy pitchers. And I really like the way Mike Leake pitched this spring. I mean, if you're going to take anything away from the spring as far as pitchers, Mike Leake pitched probably the best of the Cardinals staff. So I'm just a little worried about Walker. I mean, no matter where he pitches, I'm just worried about what kind of year he's going to produce in his second full season with his inability to really locate that fastball.
Yeah, he looked good a couple days ago. But you're right. It's always an interesting possibility there. I hopefully we'll see the Michael Walker that we're used to, the one that we've, you know, has legend status in St. Louis, and not the guy that pitched the second half of last year. Yeah, we've probably beaten around pretty much everything. you know, again, with the season ending, the spring season ending today, the season starting on Sunday, it's make or break time for everybody, and we know what the roster is going to be like to start with, and we get to that great time when you get a game on for the most part every day, although that, you know, those off days early on kind of mess with you, but. You get that daily routine, and that's a beautiful thing. Which I guess means it's time to transition into Mr. Buffa's movie reviews and highlights. Dan, what are we watching this week?
Well, you know, I mean, there was one movie that really comes out that I haven't seen yet. There's a movie called kind of more of an indie sci-fi movie called Midnight Special. It has your new favorite villain, Adam Driver, is in it. He plays a government guy, and it's kind of built. Jeff Nichols wrote this story as a way of dealing with the burden of being a new father. He wrote this father-son tale of a father who basically kind of takes his kid away from his town because his kid has special powers. You don't know what those special powers are, but the government wants his kid. The cults want his kid. And it's really this movie. It's built as a sci-fi kind of movie, but it's more of a personal tale about that this director just kind of wrote to really explain how you change when you have a kid and what you're willing to do to protect your kid, no matter what, you know, it might do to the rest of the world. The most important thing is your kid. And that's what really struck to me if you watch the trailer for Midnight Special, you might get, okay, sci-fi, I'm not really into that, but there's a personal story. So it's kind of more of an indie film. It's kind of a good little bounce back from the big extravaganza that was Batman vs. Superman, which is still being talked about, still being pulled apart or, you know, beaten down. I didn't think it was that bad. And I thought there was some, there was definitely some good and some bad and ugly, but I would recommend it, especially to fans of DC. I think it's worth seeing. I think it's just, I mean, I think people are just going to see it just to see how bad or good it is. So you have that option, or you have 10 Cloverfield Lane. That's another kind of thriller/sci-fi movie built around three people down in a bunker who think that there's something upstairs that could be aliens, could be something else. But, you know, there's a lot of different fare out there right now. April's kind of an interesting month. There's big screen fare like Batman. There's the more indie movies like Cloverfield Lane and Midnight Special. So this week I will be seeing Michael Shannon in Midnight Special, but I think it's going to be one of those movies that kind of comes out of nowhere and really pleases the kind of person that needs the kind of like that indie flair to kind of balance the big summer studio movies.
Sounds good. Yeah, there was a lot of talk about Batman and Superman, especially contrasted with the crossover that happened Monday night on TV, the Flash and Supergirl coming together in a much lighter, much more friendly, humorous way instead of trying to beat each other up and things of that nature. So I saw the crossover. I'm probably not necessarily going to be one to go out to the movie theater, but you know what, it's brought in half a billion dollars already.
So, yeah, it's already made that much.
Yeah, a lot of it overseas, but it seems to be doing pretty well. So most likely it'll be around for a while. Like you said, there's not anything huge to knock it off till, I guess, what, the Jungle Book comes out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean that's the next big movie to come out. So, but I mean there's a lot of different options out there for everybody to see. If I had to pick really one movie, I'd tell you to go see 10 Cloverfield Lane. I think that's just something that's not really what you expect. But if you need to find out what's going on with Superman, Batman, it's not as bad as they say.
And Star Wars Force Awakens, available on iTunes and Blue and digital download tomorrow and on disc on Tuesday, I believe. So I think mine should be shipping pretty soon. My pre-order that I ordered about, 2.5 months ago. All right. Well, we'll be back at it next week. We'll have a handful of games to talk about. We'll have the first series against the Pirates under our belt, if nothing else, and maybe a game or so against the Braves. And we can get us some early – we can draw some early wild conclusions and say that Randall Grichuk's going to hit 80 home runs because
– Hey, you never know.
He's hit two already, so he's going to hit 80, something like that. So all the fun stuff that comes with early season paces. So for Dennis DeBuffa, I'm Mr. Shopto. We'll talk at you later. Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdanceinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.